Chapter 35. Christian heard voices, and found that they proceeded from a company of men and women who were traversing a hollow ahead of him, the tops only of their heads being visible. He paused and thought of the money he carried. It was almost too early even for Christian seriously to fear robbery. Nevertheless, he took a precaution which ever since his boyhood he had adopted, whenever he carried more than 2 or 3 shillings upon his person, a precaution somewhat like that of the owner of the pit diamond, when filled with similar misgivings. He took off his boots, untied the guineas, and emptied the contents of one little bag into the right boot, and of the other into the left, spreading them as flatly as possible over the bottom of each, which was really a spacious coffer by no means limited to the size of the foot. Pulling them on again, unlacing them to the very top, he proceeded on his way, more easy in his head than under his soles. His path converged towards that of the noisy company, and on coming nearer he found to his relief that they were several Egdon people whom he knew very well, while with them walked Fairway, of Bloom's End. "What? Christian going to?" said Fairway as soon as he recognized the newcomer. "Who have got no young woman nor wife to your name, to guy a gown piece to, I'm sure." "What do you mean?" said Christian. "Why, the raffle. The one we go to every year." "Going to the raffle as well as ourselves?" "Never knew a word odd. Is it like cudgel playing, or other sportful forms of bloodshed?" "I don't want to go, thank you, Mr. Fairway, and no offense. Christian don't know the fun odd, and 'twould be a fine sight for him," said a buxom woman. "Here's no danger at all, Christian. Every man puts in a shilling apiece, and one wins a gown piece for his wife or sweetheart, if he's got one. Well, as that's not my fortune, there's no meaning in it to me. But I should like to see the fun, if there's nothing of the blackguard in it, and if a man may look on without cost, or getting into any dangerous wrangle." "There will be no uproar at all," said Timothy. "Sure, Christian, if you'd like to come, we'll see there's no harm done. And no batty gaieties, I suppose? You see, neighbors, if so, it would be setting father a bad example, as he is so light-morled. But a gown piece for a shilling, and no blackguard is worth looking into see, and it wouldn't hinder me half an hour. Yes, I'll come, if you will step a little way towards Miss Tover with me afterwards, supposing night should have closed in, and nobody else is going that way?" One or two promised, and Christian, diverging from his direct path, turned round to the right with his companions towards the quiet woman. When they entered the large common room of the inn, they found assembled there about 10 men from among the neighboring population, and the group was increased by the new contingent to double that number. Most of them were sitting round the room in seats divided by wooden elbows like those of crude cathedral stalls, which were carved with the initials of many an illustrious drunkard of former times who had passed his days and his nights between them, and now lay as an alcoholic cinder in the nearest churchyard. Among the cups on the long table before the sitters lay an open parcel of light drapery, the gown piece, as it was called, which was to be raffled for. Wilda was standing with his back to the fireplace smoking a cigar, and the promoter of the raffle, a packman from a distant town, was expatiating upon the value of the fabric as material for a summer dress. "Now, gentlemen," he continued, as the newcomers drew up to the table, "there's 5 have entered, and we want 4 more to make up the number. I think, by the faces of those gentlemen who have just come in, that they are shrewd enough to take advantage of this rare opportunity of beautifying their ladies at a very trifling expense." Fairway, Sam, and another placed their shillings on the table, and the man turned to Christian. "No, sir," said Christian, drawing back, with a quick gaze of misgiving. "I'm only a poor chap come to look on, and it please ye, sir. I don't so much as know how you do it. If so be I was sure of getting it, I would put down the shilling, but I couldn't otherwise." "I think you might almost be sure," said the peddler. In fact, now I look into your face, even if I can't say you are sure to win, I can say that I never saw anything look more like winning in my life. You'll anyhow have the same chance as the rest of us, said Sam. And the extra luck of being the last comer, said another. And I was born YA call, and perhaps can be no more ruined than drowned? Christian added, beginning to give way. Ultimately Christian laid down his shilling, the raffle began, and the dice went round. When it came to Christian's turn he took the box with a trembling hand, shook it fearfully, and threw a pair royal. Three of the others had thrown common low pairs, and all the rest mere points. The gentleman looked like winning, as I said, observed the chapman blandly. Take it, sir, the article is yours. Ha ha ha, said Fairway. I'm damned if this isn't the queerest start that ever I knowed. Mine? Asked Christian, with a vacant stare from his target eyes. I haven't got neither maid, wife, nor widder belonging to me at all, and I'm afeard it will make me laughed at to add it, Master Traveler. What with being curious, to join in I never thought of that. What shall I do why a woman's clothes in my bedroom, and not lose my decency? Keep 'em, to be sure, said Fairway, if it is only for luck. Perhaps 'twill tempt some woman that thy poor carcass had no power over when standing empty-handed. Keep it, certainly, said Wildev, who had idly watched the scene from a distance. The table was then cleared of the articles, and the men began to drink. Well, to be sure, said Christian, half to himself. To think I should have been born so lucky as this, and not have found it out until now. What curious creatures these dice be, powerful rulers of us all, and yet at my command. I am sure I never need be afeard of anything after this. He handled the dice fondly one by one. Why, sir, he said in a confidential whisper to Wildev, who was near his left hand, if I could only use this power that's in me of multiplying money I might do some good to a near relation of yours, seeing what I've got about me of hers, eh? He tapped one of his money-laden boots upon the floor. What do you mean? Said Wildev. That's a secret. Well, I must be going now. He looked anxiously towards Fairway. Where are you going? Wildev asked. To Miss Tover Knapp. I have to see Mrs. Thomason there, that's all. I am going there to fetch Mrs. Wildev. We can walk together. Wildev became lost in thought, and a look of inward illumination came into his eyes. It was money for his wife that Mrs. Eobright could not trust him with. Yet she could trust this fellow, he said to himself. Why doesn't that which belongs to the wife belong to the husband too? He called to the potboy to bring him his hat, and said, Now, Christian, I am ready. Mr. Wildev, said Christian timidly, as he turned to leave the room, would you mind lending me them wonderful little things that carry my luck inside them, that I might practice a bit by myself, you know? He looked wistfully at the dice and box lying on the mantelpiece. Certainly, said Wildev carelessly. They were only cut out by some lad with his knife, and are worth nothing. And Christian went back and privately pocketed them. Wildev opened the door and looked out. The night was warm and cloudy. Why gad! 'Tis dark, he continued. But I suppose we shall find our way. If we should lose the path it might be awkward, said Christian. Lantern is the only shield that will make it safe for us. Let's have a lantern by all means. The stable lantern was fetched and lighted. Christian took up his gown piece, and the two set out to ascend the hill. Within the room the men fell into chat till their attention was for a moment drawn to the chimney corner. This was large, and, in addition to its proper recess, contained within its jambs, like many on Egdon, a receding seat, so that a person might sit there absolutely unobserved, provided there was no fire to light him up, as was the case now, and throughout the summer. From the niche a single object protruded into the light from the candles on the table. It was a clay pipe, and its color was reddish. The men had been attracted to this object by a voice behind the pipe asking for a light. Upon my life, it fairly startled me when the man spoke. Said Fairway, handing a candle. H is the riddleman. You've kept a quiet tongue, young man. Yes, I had nothing to say, observed Van. In a few minutes he arose and wished the company good night. Meanwhile Wilda Van Christian had plunged into the heath. It was a stagnant, warm, and misty night, full of all the heavy perfumes of new vegetation not yet dried by hot sun, and among these particularly the scent of the fern. The lantern, dangling from Christian's hand, brushed the feathery fronds in passing by, disturbing moths and other winged insects, which flew out and alighted upon its horny panes. So you have money to carry to Mrs. Wildov? Said Christian's companion, after a silence. Aunt, you think it very odd that it shouldn't be given to me? As man and wife be one flesh, 'twould have been all the same, I should think, said Christian. But my strict documents was to give the money into Mrs. Wildov's hand, and 'tis well to do things right. No doubt, said Wildov. Any person who had known the circumstances might have perceived that Wildov was mortified by the discovery that the matter in transit was money, and not, as he had supposed when at Bloom's End, some fancy knick-knack which only interested the two women themselves. Mrs. Eobright's refusal implied that his honor was not considered to be of sufficiently good quality to make him a safer bearer of his wife's property. How very warm it is tonight, Christian, he said, panting, when they were nearly under Rainbarrow. Let us sit down for a few minutes, for heaven's sake. Wilda flung himself down on the soft ferns, and Christian, placing the lantern and parcel on the ground, perched himself in a cramped position hard by, his knees almost touching his chin. He presently thrust one hand into his coat pocket, and began shaking it about. What are you rattling in there? Said Wildov. Only the dice, sir, said Christian, quickly withdrawing his hand. Hat magical machines these little things be, Mr. Wildov. 'Tis a game I should never get tired of. Would you mind my taking them out, and looking at them for a minute, to see how they are made? I didn't like to look close before the other men, for fear they should think it bad manners in me. Christian took them out, and examined them in the hollow of his hand by the lantern light. That these little things should carry such luck, and such charm, and such a spell, and such power in them, passes all I ever heard or seed, he went on, with a fascinated gaze at the dice, which, as is frequently the case in country places, were made of wood, the points being burnt upon each face with the end of a wire. They are a great deal in a small compass, you think? Yes. Do ye suppose they really be the devil's playthings, Mr. Wildov? If so, 'tis no good sign that I be such a lucky man. You ought to win some money, now that you've got them. Any woman would marry you then. Now is your time, Christian, and I would recommend you not to let it slip. Some men are born to luck, some are not. I belong to the latter class. Did you ever know anybody who was born to it besides myself? Oh yes. I once heard of an Italian who sat down at a gaming table with only a Louis, that's a foreign sovereign, in his pocket. He played on for 24 hours, and won £10,000, stripping the bank he had played against. Then there was another man who had lost £1,000, and went to the broker's next day to sell stock, that he might pay the debt. The man to whom he owed the money went with him in a hackney coach, and to pass the time they tossed who should pay the fare. The ruined man won, and the other was tempted to continue the game, and they played all the way. When the coachman stopped, he was told to drive home again. The whole £1,000 had been won back by the man who was going to sell. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.